Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
It's that time on the radio where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. He comes along once a week. He's always punctual. And it's busy times, Bill. Complicated times. We've got that six-letter word called Brexit. And there's been more official discussion since we last spoke about it. So let's have a look at the subject again today. So first off, do you think any progress has been made about resident rights? Because this is the key thing for our listeners, I guess.
Yes, I think there has been some progress. I think that the speech that Theresa May, the Prime Minister, made in Florence was positive in that sense. And I think that there is now a very clear understanding, and there have been some issues regarding, for example, state pensions, where they've reached agreements. And you think to yourself, if they're actually agreeing on, you know, increasing the state pensions for continental Europeans living in the UK and European and UK people living outside the UK, you're getting towards a stage where it's pretty inevitable that they're going to agree that there will be a status available to British people living in continental Europe and vice versa. I've never doubted that, Howard. I mean, how could you possibly doubt it? There are hundreds of thousands of British people living in Spain, contributing phenomenally to the Spanish economy, to the French economy, to the Portuguese economy, to the Cyprus economy, to the Malta economy. You know, Blevins Franks has got 100 plus staff in Malta. How can you possibly suggest that they would not want the economic benefit that comes from all of that, regardless of all the other issues, trade issues? They certainly don't want to lose the idea that the economic benefit of immigration is of general benefit to the economy of each individual country that allows it. So, you know, I think the residence rights thing is a bit overplayed. And anyway, what's the worst case scenario, Howard? You and I go back a long way, plus 20, 25 years plus. And the truth is, you know, and I know that it was very simple 25 years ago to go down to the local police station and pick up your residencia, get yourself an NIE number and hook yourself up into the Spanish economy. And they welcomed you with open arms. I mean, that would be the worst default option that I can think of. And yet it's not very difficult to obtain a right to live in Spain if you bring economic benefit. There may be some changes at the margins about healthcare and other things, you know, exchangeable healthcare, but I think the residence rights are going to be pretty much secure.
Well, you're confident on that, and I suppose it's win-win, really, if you look at it from a distance. So,
no, yeah. The real winner is continental Europe. There are far more Brits living outside of the United Kingdom in much warmer climes with perhaps better lifestyles and food choices. Now, that's not true, perhaps, of the UK these days, but nonetheless, there's more British people living outside of UK than there are EU residents living in the UK.
Yeah. Now, there's been some red lines, if I can use that expression. Now, one of them was the power of the European Court of Justice. And if we have this so-called transition or interregnum period, what would happen with the judiciary in the UK? Now, this is really complicated. I think it's a bit of a stumbling block.
I think it is a stumbling block. I think, you know, to suggest that you're going to become a sovereign state again following the referendum and then that you're still going to accede to some of the judgments of the European courts is quite difficult. I think this is one of the things that has perhaps upset a lot of people who voted in the referendum. I've no doubt that immigration triggered the volume of people voting for Brexit. But there is no doubt amongst a number of people I've met who suggest that it is the increasing power of the European courts and judgments made by commissars that have no understanding of an Anglo-Saxon culture that has offended people in many of those things. I mean, Abu El Hamza, the man with the hook hand who took, I think, something like 12 years to be got away from the UK, who you know, cost 25 million, went to court 15 or 14 or 15 times, and all because the European Court of Human Rights overruled what the UK government wanted to do, which was to get him out of the country and back to where he's being charged with terrorism. And that has happened since, but the process was elongated by a European court judgment. And those sort of judgments, and you know how big a cabbage should be and what length a cucumber should be, have irritated the UK population, because they seem to be imposed without any true consultation as to their worth. And as a consequence, I think that is going to be a problem. Now, that red line, as you say, and I understand why the European Union wants their citizens living in the UK to still be protected by the European Court of Justice. But in logic, Howard, if you have left your country of birth, if you've left Poland or Romania or somewhere else, and you've travelled overland to find a new life in the UK, even if it's only for the next 10 years, you surely ought to be subject to the laws of the land into which you've moved rather than the land you've moved from. And if you go back to the land you moved from, well, of course, you reassume the judgmental rights of that country and no longer the judgmental rights of the UK. So whilst Theresa May has said that she's insisting that she's going to take back control of the laws, and that, you know, post the 2-year negotiation period and any extension, she wants to have, and so to the Brexiteers, exclusive enforcement of UK rights within its borders. But she is saying now in the negotiations that there's going to be a bit more flexibility by signalling a sort of a future role, if you like, of the European Court of Justice in trying to settle disputes on British soil. But she's saying also that whilst this is going to incorporate legal protections for EU citizens, it is for the UK to determine the rights and privileges of those citizens. And I can see that the ECJ may have a supplementary role in considering a judgment where it does have some impact across the wider circle of UK and continental Europe. But I can't really see how those people who voted for Brexit will live with a capitulation into continuing to have the European Court of Justice run the justice system of the United Kingdom when it has a perfectly sound judicial system. And not saying it's always fair or right, but it's a perfectly proper, well-established judicial system. And sovereignty surely means that if you are going to be a Brexiteer, you will want your judicial system to be off the country that now runs its own affairs. It's a challenging one, and I can see why there are hurdles to overcome. But this is where the complex of these negotiations sits, I'm afraid.
Yep, indeed. So for our listeners in Spain, Bill, one issue of concern, of course, for expatriates is health care. Does it look this will continue?
I think both sides, you know, have now confirmed that they're going to carry on reimbursing a number of healthcare costs for citizens under the European Health Insurance Card and what's known as the S1 scheme. They've also considered to continue yearly inflation increase in state pension payments for nationals living abroad. And the simple fact is, I think that it's to the mutual advantage of both sides of this argument, the EU and the UK, to agree a formula by which the individuals who now in substantial numbers reside in the UK and the UK expatriates who in similar substantial numbers reside in continental Europe have the rights of access to local health treatment under a scheme or another. Now, quite how that scheme will eventually map out, I'm not entirely sure. There is a suggestion, and I'm not sure that I have statistical proof of this, but there is a suggestion I read recently that the volume of British people living outside of UK and in continental Europe have transferred significantly more wealth and economic benefit to Europe than those immigrants coming from Europe and into the UK. Now, whether it's true or not, I'm not entirely sure, but it sounds possibly that it is true. And if it is, no one wants to you know, lose the benefit of all of this one way or the other. The UK do not want to lose the benefit of the incredible number of hard-working immigrants that come to the UK and do a damn good job. And I'm sure that the European, our European neighbour, continental European neighbours, don't want to lose the economic benefit that comes from people retiring and working within Europe. And so, I think the health issue will come to something of a conclusion, not in the not-too-distant future, if I'm honest. I think that that is one of the early things that they'll be able to agree on.
Yeah, let's hope so. Retired expatriates are also concerned about how Brexit could affect their state pension and also payments from personal pensions. Can you put their minds at rest?
Well, it is an area of concern, and it's an area as well that if you are an individual in receipt of a personal pension or a state pension, you may want to talk to someone like Blevins Franks, because it is an area that now needs to be resolved. And what everyone is trying to avoid is this potential cliff edge, as they've called it, for British personal pension and insurance payments. Now, under the current rules, for example, just to try and explain it to you, Blevins Franks and all of its advisory staff, its partners and its senior partners and its client service staff, all of them are qualified individuals. They've all passed the appropriate exams to make it possible for them to give sensible, objective, independent financial advice. Now, rather than the company being regulated in every country in which it operates, which of course is then in the language of that country, which often isn't spoken as well as it should be by British expatriates. So rather than being regulated by the insurance and investment regulator in Spain and the same group of people in France and Portugal and Cyprus and Malta, Blevins Franks has imported its skills and talents under the regulatory regime of the UK. And we have passported our services into those countries in which we operate, and our clients benefit from the fact that the Financial Conduct Authority is looking after the affairs of our clients and supervising and regulating the business of Blevins Franks, to whom and we have to report to them. Now, that's a much more efficient way of doing it. Now, what's going to happen when that passporting regime comes under negotiation? It may be that the continental European countries and the EU as a whole decide we won't allow you to passport directly in. However, my gut instinct is that the Financial Conduct Authority is extremely well respected by the rest of continental Europe. It is a leading light in the field of regulation, despite some hiccups along the way. And I think that they may eventually come to the conclusion they're better off with the regulation of advisors by the FCA than they are by having them advisors regulated in each of these individual countries where the regulatory regime is somewhat less efficient. I suspect that will be something else on the negotiating table. One of the great advantages of Blevins Franks is that for the last 20 years or so, we have run all of our back office services and a number of client support services and our trust business out of Malta. It wasn't an accident. It was understood at some point in time that we might need a central European base for our business. And if indeed there isn't passporting permitted once the negotiations are complete, and I suspect they might be permitted, but if they're not, we will simply passport through the qualifications that our client, our partners and advisory staff have by using our regulatory status with the Malta Financial Services Authority, who will then permit us to transact business within continental Europe. So we've kind of got our bets covered at Blevins Franks, and that's why I think individuals are well advised to come to Blevins Franks, because whether the passporting of financial advisory services is permitted or not, we have plan B ready to roll the moment we know what the results of these negotiations are, and our advisors will still be regulated by a competent authority, the Malta Financial Services Authority, who frankly wrote their rule book based upon the Financial Conduct Authority. So, yeah, you know, it's quite a useful position to be in. It's in comparison to lots of our competitors. I know that they are now envious of the fact that we have locations in both the United Kingdom and in continental Europe, because otherwise it's going to be quite difficult if you have to run at this at the last moment.
Yeah, indeed. Well, interestingly, in her speech in Florence on the 22nd of September, Prime Minister Theresa May requested a 2-year transition period for Britain's exit from the Union. I think it was a Labour idea, but anyway, do you think it's a good idea, and do you think it'll happen?
Yeah, I do think there's a lot to adjust to, you know, one way and the other, the continental Europeans and the Brits have all got to adjust to this new environment. I mean, it's a challenging, social mix. And in that speech, I think she was about to make this transition period, whether Mr. Corbyn or not had interfered, because I think she does realise that, you're going to need a period of adjustment between the end of the Article 50 negotiations and the time at which you move that big step forward into becoming, an independent sovereign nation again. And so I think the transition period, will come under discussion, I think, later this month. And it will be interesting to see what happens, because I think much of what she will get out of those negotiations that are due to start at the end of this month will depend on whether the European Union think there's been sufficient progress. But I think there's suddenly the worm is beginning to turn. And I saw recently that Mrs. May was saying, to the EU, before we meet, I better tell you that the ball is now in your court. We've given you everything we think we can give you, and you now have to make a judgment on whether or not you think the relationship between us can now move forward to a more positive, in a more positive way. And when you consider the economic difference between what continental Europe sell into the UK and what the UK sell into Europe, it's massively in favour of continental Europe. You'd think they were foolish to try and stretch these negotiations too far. One of the issues that's come up in the last week, and which does concern me a bit, is it's been suggested by lawyers that the Article 50, which was invoked by Theresa May and due to run out in March 2019, could be revoked at any time during these negotiations. And so, there is a kind of a back door to this. There never was intended to be a back door to the European Union, but it seems to me in connection with these negotiations, there is the possibility that Article 50 could be revoked, and the political circumstances of the UK are so volatile at the moment, we just have to wait and see what comes of it. But I think at the moment it is they're steaming forward towards Brexit, I think.
See, I suppose really if you look at it over the last 16 months, not a lot of progress has been made, and so I think this transitional period is logical.
Agreed.
From the point of view, now do you think it would benefit to expats who are living in Spain, or perhaps those who are perhaps thinking of moving here?
Yeah, because I think if there is a transition period, it is likely to still reserve unto those people who wish to remove themselves from continental Europe into the UK, and I think that was part of the argument for her agreeing to it. But it would also mean that people living in Spain and people planning to move to Spain would be able to take advantage of the current way in which things work. Because if there's a transition period, you'd imagine that we would remain pretty much full members of the EU until the end of that transition period, by which time we would have had the 2 years of Article 50 and another 2 years, 4 years in total, to work out and weave our way through all the various hurdles that may be presented to us to get to the right answer for ourselves as individuals at the end of that four-year period. Now, one of the great things about Blevins Franks is that we are, with our ear to the ground, with our contacts at substantially high levels within both UK politics and indeed within the European Union, and of course we have ears to the ground around continental Europe as well. And I think that Blevins Franks are in a unique position to provide the sort of balanced advice to individuals who are thinking of remaining within continental Europe and those who are thinking of going to Europe, because we simply have much more experience than any of our competitors. That's about it in a nutshell, really.
Yeah. So your advice to listeners would be to get in touch with you. And how can they do that?
Well, if you go to the website at blevinsfranks.com, you'll find all the offices listed there. All the individuals who are regulated and give independent financial advice are listed there. There's someone not too far from you, and they would love to hear from you. And knowing that you're taking advice from someone living and working in the environment and the location in which you live, it's a great comfort.
Yeah, indeed it is. Thank you very much, Bill. We'll talk in Spain at the same time next week.
It's a pleasure, Howard. Have a good week.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.